Welcome to You Don't Even Like This Band, a podcast about bands you probably don't even like.
We hope you don't know this one.
With your hosts, Adam Todd Brown, Andy Sell, and Travis Clark.
Everybody, welcome to You Don't Even Like This Band, the Fleetwood Mac season, a.k.a. Pod Your Own Way, a.k.a. O-Potty, a.k.a.
Second Pod News.
Don't Pod.
Pod Dust Woman.
Mm-hmm. Pod Day Morning.
I think I still like Green Podarishi the best.
Or Pusk. There's always Pusk.
Pusk is just, that's what we should call our band when we start a band.
Our Fleetwood Mac cover band.
Yeah. We could just call it The Cast.
Oof, who's playing guitar in our Fleetwood Mac cover band? That's going to be tall order.
I think we should get Peter Green.
I think we should get Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Bob Weston. I vote for Bob Weston.
I vote for Curry, what's his name?
Grant.
Curry Grant.
Hey, by the way, I'm Adam Todd Brown. Anyone else? No one?
I'm Travis fucking Clark.
I just feel like there's an order to this, and it's Adam, and then Travis, and then me, and I feel like if I jump in front of Travis, it's going to throw the whole rhythm off, so I don't want to...
I agree.
Yarr, Puskers, I'm Andy.
So when we left off, we were talking about the recording of Rumors, and guess what? We're still talking about the recording of Rumors.
What?
It took a long time. The band was recording at a recording studio called The Record Plant in Sausalito, place with a lot of character, a lot of personality. That carried on for a few months, at which point they returned to L.A. to record at a studio called Wally Hiders. No pit, no waterbed floor conference room, no nitrous tanks. Boring.
Sounds like a terrible place to record an album.
Yeah. Also, too, like, what an awful name. Hey, you want to go record at Wally Hiders? That sounds great.
Yeah,
like,
what's he hiding? The production value?
Am I right?
He's hiding the pit and the speedboat and the limos and the lip laydown room.
Hey, Wally, where you hiding the nitrous? Is it on the speedboat?
So along with all the relationship issues and other assorted band-related drama that we've gotten into so far, everyone in the band was also getting rich as they were recording Rumors. Because
that sounds like it's going to make things better, because if anything turns people into more compassionate human beings, it's getting rich.
Yeah. Having a shit ton of money does generally make you a much better person, much more tolerant of those around you.
And, you know, luckily for these people, maybe they're doing well financially, but they're still taking care of themselves. They're not being babied or having their whims just met by drugs and assistance. You know, they're bootstrapping themselves.
Yeah, really.
They're all acting like adults.
Very much so. And so they start making more money. They start, you know, buying houses. Christine McVie bought a big house in L.A. and lived there with Curry Grant for a while.
Oh, my God. So this was a real deal thing for her. It wasn't a just fucking the lighting director because he was there guy.
I mean, she wrote a song about him.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah. Meanwhile, John's like, she doesn't mean anything to me.
Meanwhile, John's like, arg, I'm buying a houseboat, I is. Because that's what John McVie did. He bought a houseboat and lived in Marina Del Rey like a fucking disgraced TV detective.
I would watch that show.
Oh, yeah.
The McVie Files.
Fleetwood Dick.
Hell yeah.
The McVie Files. Yeah.
He's there just, I'm getting too old for this shit. You know, living on a boat, got a pet alligator.
Yeah, he wears a straw hat, I think.
Meanwhile, Stevie Nicks moved out of Lindsey Buckingham's house. He already had a house. And she bought her own house that she nicknamed El Contento because Lindsey Buckingham didn't live there.
I speak a little bit of Spanish. I think that means the Contento.
I think so, yeah. And... Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're reaching the point in history where Lindsey Buckingham just starts being a real problem of a person.
Starts?
Well, I mean, like, they don't talk about it much before all of this. Like, do you have information we don't have?
Well, I mean, but we already kind of covered how he was, like, just sitting around doing nothing while Stevie Nicks was doing all of the work in the family.
Oh, I mean, if Lindsey Buckingham was just doing nothing, that would be... That would be a big step up from what we're about to talk about.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, my point is he already sucks. He's just about to suck so much more that we forget how he already sucked.
Yeah. There's one example they talk about. During these recording sessions, Stevie Nicks, when she bought her house, she moved an old friend of her and Lindsay's in, a guy named Tom Moncrief, who was in the band Fritz with both of them. And he becomes like her Lindsay Buckingham in terms of like writing songs and bouncing ideas off of each other. And at one point, she brings a song called Smile at You to the recording sessions, and the band starts working on it. But then at some point during the sessions, Lindsay Buckingham finds out that Tom Moncrief helped her write this song. And so he just stops working on it altogether and like refuses to play on it and gives up. But relax, he did eventually come back and help her produce that song in 2003. So,
I was waiting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, just a few decades and a half. And then
he just needed time to simmer down.
Yeah. Time heals all wounds, you know?
I needed to process what happened and just, I was just on my own timeline.
Yeah, I need to process what happened. Like some great tragedy happened because your lady was writing a song with somebody else. More like Lindsay Suckingham.
Oh!
Oh, hey. I told him.
Look out, everybody. Roasted by Andy.
Look, I just tell it how it is, and I don't care. Woke mob, try to cancel me.
Hey, you know who's got some good ideas? Lindsay Buckingham.
Well, kind of in this next case. This next one is a little more funny than problematic.
Jesus
but
Christ.
It's also the band and the people in the studio would often, when they were recording at Wally Hyder's, which is like right in the heart of L.A., they would often go to this Chinese restaurant called Kowloon's that was nearby that apparently was known for making very stiff drinks. And during their time at Kowloon's, Lindsay Buckingham came up with this prank called Kowlooning. Here's how the prank goes. He would throw water in your lap underneath the table.
Great prank.
Just
great
like a whole fucking glass of water in your lap.
Anytime an adult comes up with a prank, it's just some shit like this. That's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
But I kind of love it. Like, yeah, I'm the kind of person who's like, the funniest thing in the world to me, and everybody hates it, is like if you're holding something, coming and smacking it out of your hand while you're looking, I find that so funny. People hate it, and I understand why they hate it, but it is very funny to me.
Yeah. Or someone's taking a drink and you just like nudge the bottom of the glass a little bit.
I was doing a backyard show with our buddy Kevin Anderson once, and I went, hey, man, do you have a smoke? And he gave me a cigarette and I just threw it into the bushes. And I'm like, I don't smoke. And he was like, why would you do that? I'm like, because it's hilarious.
Yeah, I was at the Heart of Illinois Fair once and a friend of mine who I went to school with walks up to me and asked if he could borrow a dollar. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, man. And I hand him a dollar. He pulls out this fucking fat wad of money and just adds the dollar to it, put it back in his pocket. And that, to this day, is one of the funniest things anyone's ever done.
That's great.
Pranks like that are like aggravating, but basically don't leave any damage are fine.
Right.
But you're soaking my crotch while we're in public. It's like, you're getting stabbed with a fork if you do that.
I disagree. Andy, I want to go out to lunch with you so that I can make it look like you've wet yourself.
If you're fine with getting a fork in your arm, then by all means do it. Because that will be the consequence.
I feel like this was all based off of the name of this place. Where to like Lindsay Buckingham, it's like Kowloon's. It kind of sounds like clown. What if we call it Kowlooning? Like we're clowning. We're Kowlooning.
Oh my God.
And there eventually came to be several variations of Kowlooning. Because at some point, like the entire band starts getting in on it. But it was Lindsay Buckingham's idea at first.
Look, we know they love jamming, so they just jammed on the idea.
They did, and they came up with a bunch of different riffs. There's the CIA Kowloon. That's the covert under the table original version. There's the waterfall Kowloon, where someone pours water down the front of your menu. It just runs into your lap.
Can you imagine working at this restaurant and just watching these fuckers come in day after day? Just like, oh, God damn it.
I feel like
here again.
I bet they tipped well.
But also, too, I just feel like at this point, you're like, oh, guess who's here? It's the Fleetwood Mac guys. Let's see what Kowloon they do today. What Kowlooning are they doing?
There was also the Chow Mein Kowloon, where someone would just dump food in your lap.
I love it.
It's like, this is the shit my friends and I did when we were teenagers at Denny's. This isn't, like, what is wrong
with you? But imagine that version of you is very high on cocaine and very wealthy. Well,
there we go. There we go. It all comes back to cocaine.
And wealth.
It all comes back to the cocaine and the wealth.
So
I just, it's, yeah, so, I don't, I'm not into this. Don't do this.
But still, like I said, that, in terms of Lindsay Buckingham's behavior, is a little more funny than problematic. Now let's talk about the Christina incident.
Ooh.
This is in Ken Kaleigh's book. I don't know if Lindsay Buckingham has ever addressed this or if he's ever been asked to address it. I didn't know about it. But at one point during the Rumors recording sessions, when they were recording at Wally Heider's, he says Lindsay Buckingham one morning just storms in the studio from off the street and just, like, heads right into the recording room. Meanwhile, Richard Dashett comes in with a woman named Christina, who was Lindsay Buckingham's girlfriend at the time. And Christina is crying. And so Ken asks Christina what happened, and this is a quote. "I don't know. I think it's over. And what's worse is that Lindsay punched me in the face. Then he started yelling all this crazy stuff about how he couldn't take it, and I had to leave." And
well, that's just what he calls the honeymooner Kowloon. That's just his fun prank.
Right?
Jesus fucking Christ, what a dickhead.
Yeah, that's bad times. And apparently, and I guess we're going to have to cover this book, Lindsay Buckingham has a song called Go Insane. It's one of his big solo hits. And it's about a woman he dated for a bunch of years named Carol. And apparently Carol wrote a book about Lindsay Buckingham, and it is not flattering, to say the least.
There's only two reasons someone should write a book about you. One, you are a great historical figure people need to know more about, or it's a tell-all, like, you are a bastard person and now I'm going to come clean. And I'm not looking forward to Lindsay Buckingham's tell-all here.
Yeah. Lindsay Buckingham always scared me when I was a kid. Like,
he does have a frightening face.
He's got an intense face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, he's a great musician. He's still probably my favorite guitar player, but I can see it. Like, all the stuff that comes up in this book, I don't doubt that it's true.
It's tough, man. This is tough because it's like, I feel there's opportunity to make light of it or make jokes about it, but then you're like, I don't want to make jokes about this. This sucks, man. This is what a shitty thing.
Yeah. This is another quote from Ken Kaleigh. "Lindsay was just Lindsay, an immature, insecure, overly intelligent, extremely talented musician who couldn't control his emotions. I'd seen outbursts from him earlier with me and Stevie, so I knew this kind of behavior was always lurking below the surface." Ugh. This is also, though, the part in history where Lindsay Buckingham kind of takes creative control of the band. And I would argue that's a good thing in terms of their musical output. He definitely changed Fleetwood Mac's sound for the better. But he also, in this book, comes off kind of like a Billy Corgan sort of figure.
I don't know what it is about bands or the creative process in a group dynamic, but it always seems to lead to this. Like, a figurehead who only leads by tyranny. You know, like, there's never like, oh, we all just kind of put shit together. We're always Fugazi and everybody has equal parts. Like, there's one person who's like, this is what we're doing and it's my way or fuck you, I'm punching you in the face.
But speaking of that, Ken Kaleigh does this really interesting thing in this book where he'll go into a lot of detail about the recording process. Then he'll tell you where in the song you can hear what he's talking about. And to demonstrate how Lindsay Buckingham ends up kind of taking control of the band, he tells this story about this drum part on the song Secondhand News, where Lindsay Buckingham wanted Mick Fleetwood to play it this certain way. And Mick Fleetwood's a very particular kind of drummer, and he literally could not play drums the way Lindsay Buckingham was playing drums. So they
if I can't play it on the vest, I don't play it.
Yeah, yeah, because Lindsay Buckingham wasn't playing it on a set of wooden balls hanging from his belt. So Mick Fleetwood was a little out of his depth. But then he also tells you, you can hear Lindsey Buckingham playing this drum part at the 38 second mark of the song Secondhand News. And sure enough, it for a second sounds like fucking Animal from the Muppets has taken over the drum set. And then it just like goes back to regular ass Mick Fleetwood drums. Very interesting. And it's, I think, one of my favorite things about this book, because reading a book like this is going to make you want to listen to the songs anyway. And the fact that he is so meticulous in pointing out, like, not just how it happened, but here's where you go to hear what I'm talking about.
I think that answers our question of, like, how did he keep such a vivid memory of all of this? I think you're right. He was clearly keeping a journal. Like, if he's that meticulous, he can tell you, here's the story, and here's the time code where you can go listen to the song. That's just a very prepared engineer slash producer.
And so, like I mentioned earlier, because the White Album was still charting around this time, the band would periodically have to go tour behind that album, which that's also, I think, and Ken Kaleh mentions it too, that's part of what makes Rumors so great, is when they were out doing these tours behind the White Album, they would play songs from Rumors and like really work them up in a live setting and then bring that back to the studio and incorporate all the things they did in that live setting onto the record itself.
Yeah, they're getting to walk out ideas in front of a live crowd and get feedback about it, like while they're developing it. Like that's,
it's the old vaudeville style. It's like you do a touring thing and then you record, then you make the little short movie of it. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
And that had to give them a lot of confidence, but there's a great, I don't know, like we haven't really hit this point, but there's a really great story in the Ken Kaleh book that I didn't put in the notes where they finally have the album recorded and sequenced, and they do, like, they're so excited about it. Everyone they've talked to is so excited about it. And they play this song for a bunch of people, and one guy comes out of it and goes, "I don't hear any hits." And instead of the band being like, "Motherfucker, what? This is the best thing we've ever done.
This is all hits."
They all immediately are like, "Holy shit, does this suck? Like, does this fucking thing suck? Is this a bad album?" Like, it took that one guy to just like destroy their confidence. It's crazy.
Who was it? Was it anybody we encountered?
No, just some, it was just Curry some random. Grant.
Bob Weston. Trust me, Mick. I don't hear a hit.
It was Peter Green. He took a sabbatical from his cult for a minute.
So during one of these tours, they book a 6-day stint at Criteria Studios in Miami to keep working on Rumors. So now we're up to, I think, 3 studios where this has been worked on. And this is the point where Ken Kaleh and Richard Dashett get promoted, which was very cool of the band, because at first those two were hired to engineer the album, and they didn't really have a producer, but they were contributing so much to the writing and recording process that the band, like, without being asked or prompted, just upgraded them to producer, which Ken Kaleh is probably rich forever because of that.
I feel like once you hit your third studio, especially if it's on your second coast of the country, you just should automatically be bumped up.
Yeah, and if you're not using like different engineers each time, if you're dragging these people with you across, you know, interstates and airlines, you go, you know, maybe we should revisit what we're crediting you as.
He tells a fun story from this time in Miami where when they all get to town, he consults the hotel list to see who's staying in what rooms in case he needs to go talk to anyone. And he sees two names that he doesn't recognize. And it turns out they were the fake names that Lindsey Buckingham and Christine McVie would use whenever they checked into hotels. Lindsey Buckingham's is Pat Pending, which that's funny. Christine McVie's is Sarah Bar Here. As in, is there a bar here?
Yeah, in her accent. Sarah Bar Here.
Sarah Bar Here.
That's great.
That is, okay, that's brilliant. But also, I want to reiterate, I think we've said this a couple times, every name in this story feels fake. Every name somebody has in this story feels fucking made up. Lindsey Buckingham. Also, Sarah Bar Here is Christine McVie, who is also Christine Perfect. Like, yeah, sorry.
I like Sarah Barr here. Patent pending. I get it's like such a guitar dork joke. That's why I love it, because that's those are the pickups you wanted, the patent pending pickups, the PAFs. But Sarah Barr here is just, it's like, makes you talk like you have an accent. Sarah Barr here.
Well, that's also like 100% a drag queen name. Like, oh, that, yeah, is for sure. There is definitely a drag queen in this country who's using that name.
And so that's all fun. But then there's another incident with Lindsay Buckingham in Miami. This is absolute cocaine tyrant behavior here. At one point, once again, they're working on his guitar solo for the song You Make Love and Fun. I've seen Fleetwood Mac in concert a few times, and I don't remember that song being played and people just like breaking out in a rage-filled mosh pit or anything. So I don't know what it is about You Make Love and Fun that brings out all this animosity in the band. But they're working on Lindsay's guitar solo for this song. And at one point, he plays a take. And he tells Richard and Ken that he doesn't like it and that he is actually so unhappy with it that he wants them to record over it. And they're both like, really? Like, it wasn't that bad. We kind of liked it. Why don't we just keep it and you play another one? And he's like, nope, record. I told you, record over it. Record over it. And so they rewind the tape and start recording again. And he plays his next take and gets to the end and he goes, you know, I actually like that previous one better. Can you play that again? And they're like, dude, you just told us to record over it. And Lindsay Buckingham fucking explodes, drops his guitar, runs into the control room, and chokes Ken Calais for deleting this guitar solo that he told Ken Calais to delete. And people have to pull Lindsay Buckingham off of him, and it turns into a whole thing. And when you read this book, like leading up to this point, you can tell Ken Calais does not like Lindsay Buckingham at all. No. And it like feels like sour grapes for a little bit. And then you get to this and it's like, oh yeah, fuck
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. I would carry this grudge for 40 years for sure.
Yes. Absolutely.
Question. Look. Do you think the cocaine had anything to do with that story?
No. No.
Yeah, that's not a coke thing.
Yeah,
for
that's
sure.
Not a cocaine thing.
I just, man, like, erase it. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Okay. No, I like the last one better. Play the last one. Well, you asked us to erase it. I'm going to come murder you. Like, what a fucking child.
Yeah.
Oh, cocaine.
Cocaine, I'm sure, played into it, but this guy.
Well, yeah, no, he's already a monster.
He's used to only getting his way. So cocaine or not, if you sit there and tell him the laws of physics don't support what you want, it's not like, oh, my expectations are ridiculous. It's I must choke you.
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah. I mean, the choking, though, that's just the Frankenstein Kowlooning.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a prank. It's just it's not a big deal. It's just a prank.
The gasping for air Kowlooning.
Yeah.
The throttle Kowlooning. So after Miami, the Sessions move back to Wally Hyder's in L.A. And this is the point in the book where Ken Calais brings up the strange and kind of sad story of the song Silver Springs, which...
Yeah, no, this song isn't like... It's on some other versions, but it's not on the original full album, right? It's like a B-side or something, right?
Right. It was the B-side to Go Your Own Way, which is fitting because Go Your Own Way is Lindsey Buckingham singing about Stevie Nicks. And Silver Springs is Stevie Nicks singing about Lindsay Buckingham. Only reason it's called Silver Springs is because she was on a road trip in Maryland and saw that name on a road sign and was like, sounds like a song name right there.
Isn't that what Steve Earle did, right?
Yes, Exit Zero. Exit Zero was...
Exit Zero, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. When they made the bus driver stop so we could go take a picture of the Exit Zero sign. So yeah. This is a song that was recorded during the Rumors sessions, and I'd argue it's one of Stevie Nicks' better songs, just like in general. It is a beautiful fucking song. They worked so hard on this song, like the guitar parts. Again, there's so much intricate detail about the recording of the song in the book, but then it ends up not being on the album. And I remember first hearing Silver Springs because they eventually put it on The Dance, which was the live album they released when they reunited in the late 90s. And I remember like finding out that this was an outtake from Rumors that just didn't make the album, and being blown away that they would cut a song like this because it's so good. And the thing is, they absolutely wanted it on the album. The problem was that back then, most people listened to music on vinyl records, and vinyl records could hold about 22 minutes of music on each side. He does mention that you can lower the volume, and that makes more space to put music, but because they were so meticulous about sound quality, they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, that's another one of those 5% situations.
Yeah, and it was also at a point in history where the louder the better kind of situation in the music industry at the time. Like, you wanted your record to be louder than other records. And so they couldn't do that. And so in the end, even though they spent weeks getting this song right, it's a standout from the sessions, there was no track sequencing, no track listing that would allow for Silver Springs to still make the album and have each side come in at under 22 minutes. Stevie Nicks put it on a solo album later, and it was on The Dance. But there's this really heartbreaking story in the book where they're still trying to get this song on the album. So Ken Kalay and Stevie Nicks are like cutting lines from the song, and she's just sobbing the whole time.
But that's not the only lines they were cutting.
Yeah, right? Probably not. But then he does mention that at some point during this process, he was like, you know, you're going to make more money if there's another of your songs on the album. And she like straightened up and was like, let's cut some fucking lines. It's fine. But in the end, the decision to cut this song happened while she was not in the studio. They just like started working on another of her songs, which is the song I Don't Want to Know, which is great. It's also a really great song on Rumors.
It's interesting because that's a lyric in Silver Springs as well.
Yeah.
Baby, I Don't Want to Know. Yeah, it's...
And
sorry.
You can tell if you, like, just through interviews, through her quotes in this book, Stevie Nicks is, I would argue, still bitter about Silver Springs not being on the Rumors album.
Devil's advocate question? Do you think there is a song on there that you would have cut and put this one in place?
Yeah, like I would cut Oh Daddy if it...
Yeah, same. That's what I was thinking.
I don't think you could cut Oh Daddy and then... Because Oh Daddy is not as long a song as Silver Springs.
That's the
thing.
I don't
think you could... Yeah. I think you'd have to cut two to fit Silver Springs on. And that's where I run into a problem of, I don't know if there are two songs that would cut for Silver Springs.
No.
But I Don't Want to Know comes close. I Don't Want to Know, in addition to Oh Daddy, comes close to cutting for Silver Springs, but...
I do wonder if replacing I Don't Want to Know with Silver Springs, like how much that would have changed the album, because I Don't Want to Know is one of the more upbeat songs.
Yeah.
So you're adding another ballad into the mix.
Yeah. Silver Springs is not. So yeah. Losing I Don't Want to Know, because it's another one of those like driving rhythmic songs.
Yeah.
That's really like, oh, yeah. I don't know if you could lose it.
They should have just waited for digital to come out. Then they could just take whatever they want.
Yeah. Why didn't they just release it on CD?
I mean, Lindsay was clearly willing to wait till 2003 to finish a song. They should have just shelved this for a little bit.
Yeah. And apparently at one point, Stevie Nicks asked to put this song on one of her solo albums. And I think she did eventually, but at first, Mick Fleetwood would not let her because he wanted to put it in a Fleetwood Mac box set. And there are so many quotes from Stevie Nicks where she's like, fucked up. That song's not on the album. Yeah. And if you listen to The Dance, after they play that song and everyone applauds, Stevie Nicks says something like, yeah, that is a good song, huh? So like, she's still fucking bitter that Silver Springs is not on the Rumors album.
I love it when you hear a song live and you hear the performer's opinion about all of this shit kind of come out. It makes me think of this one time I went to a Hall & Oates concert. I don't know if you've seen Hall & Oates recently, but like they do this like Calypso elevator Muzak version of all their songs. It's not as fun.
Yeah, you told me that. That's a big disappointment.
Yeah, but Daryl Hall is such a dick. He goes, all right, there's a bunch of songs you all know and love. Now let's hear one of John's songs. And you're like, what the fuck, dude?
Jesus. That is funny, though. So now let's flip that coin and talk about another Stevie Nicks song that did make rumors. That song being Gold Dust Woman, which I liked it already, but after reading everything about it in this book, I like it so much more. One of the weirdest moments on Rumors happens as a result of one of their transcensions, which...
See, they're helpful. The transcensions are helpful.
By the way, Mick Fleetwood, Ken Kaleigh mentions at one point that during these transcensions, Mick Fleetwood would get so high and so worked up that he would fall into this state where he couldn't really talk. And if he wanted to talk, he would pull you in close and grab any nearby object and hold it and then just stare at you wordlessly until you figured out what he wanted.
Yeah, that's what it's like if you go to his restaurant on Maui. He just comes to your table and holds things in front of you. And you're like, I guess I'll have the Fleetwood mac and cheese, I guess is what we're doing here.
No jalapenos, please.
Please, it will kill my friend Kurt.
And so, yeah, I don't blame John and Lindsay for leaving during that shit. Like, I would not. And Ken Kaleigh said he would also, when these were happening, he eventually got to a point where he would wait for Richard to leave the room, and then he would just, like, sneak out and go home. Because all they needed in those moments was someone to be there to hit the record button, and either of them could do that. So he would just bail and leave his co-producer there for hours and hours. So I don't blame him for that either.
That's a pro move. That's when you go, I'll start the session for you, and you guys finish up. Just just hit stop when you're done. Bye.
And if you listen to Gold Dust Woman, the last 60 to 90 seconds of that song are just chaos. Mm-hmm. Like, I've already mentioned, there are werewolf sounds on that.
No, that's just Steve Earle.
I wonder if it was Lindsey Buckingham, because...
I wonder if it was Mick Fleetwood trying to communicate with an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Just, ooh!
Might have been an actual fucking werewolf at this point. But I do wonder if it was Lindsey Buckingham, because one thing about Lindsey Buckingham is he wrote Holiday Road, which is the theme song to National Lampoon's Vacation. Fantastic song. And if you listen to it, there are dogs barking.
Barking dogs, yeah.
At the end of that song. And if you ever see him in concert, he does those dog barks when he plays the song.
Lindsey Buckingham is a werewolf.
I'm sorry. I believe his name is Lindsey Buckingham.
Oh, there it is.
Nailed it. And... the band was super duper high when they came up with this ending for Gold Dust Woman. But one of the sounds you hear at the end is the sound of breaking glass. And they came up with the idea to do that during one of these transcensions, but did not have glass to break in the studio, fortunately. So the next morning when everyone sobers up, they're like, that's still a good idea. Let's go get a bunch of glass. And they literally bring a stack of panes of glass of various sizes and set up in the recording booth. Mick Fleetwood puts on a raincoat and goggles and gloves, and at first tries to break the glass along with the song, like in time. That doesn't work. The first time he tries to do it, the glass does not break. The hammer just like flies and lands on the floor. So then they just record him breaking glass and then, you know, added it in post. Basically, but that's one of the things you hear at the end of that song. It's fucking crazy.
I love that he's like, we gotta be safe about this. Give me a raincoat and some goggles.
Right. But then he also, for some reason, stands on a ladder to do it.
Because he's not tall enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Gotta get a little height on that guy.
What is it? He is a ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what I'm doing here, right, is I'm breaking the glass ceiling, isn't it? All right, Mick, I get it. Good for you.
So those are the kind of stories you hear in the Ken Kaleigh book.
I love that they're in one of these transcensions and they're like, you know what we need is a giant sheet of glass to break. And then they're like, yeah, it would be awesome. And that was somebody's job the next day to be like, hey, will you go get a bunch of panes of glass for the tall pirate to break? Because he wants that to be the ending of his song.
Amazing. We do find out why the album's called Rumors.
Ooh, why is that?
Actually, pretty boring story. This is a quote. With all the rumors flying around about this album, why don't we call the album Rumors? But let's spell it the English way. John McVie. That was his idea. And everyone was like, yeah, sounds good.
I feel like John McVie, John McVie being like, I'm still in the band. Remember me? I'm not just someone you cheat on. I'm also still in the band.
You can't fire me, right? I named the album Rumors. You can't fire me.
I do like that there is not a song called Rumors on the album Rumors. I like that. I like when there's the album title and the song titles are a separate thing. You don't always need a title track.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, yeah, it's like when they say the name of the movie in the movie and you're always kind of like, you made it a little cheap.
Yeah, exactly. You know? There is also a harrowing story at one point in the book where the master tapes for Rumors are almost completely destroyed.
Oh, shit. A heroin story? I thought this was a Coke story. Would Steve Earle get into this again?
Harrowing, Andy. Harrowing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Gotcha.
The thing about tape is it wears out. And no band had ever spent this much time recording an album up to this point. So they're about 9 months in, and they've just been playing this tape over and over and over, and it starts to literally degrade and fall apart. Like, it's dissolving. All of the music on it starts to sound really dull and lifeless, and they're like, shit, we don't have an album anymore. Bright side is they had master tapes from the other studios they'd recorded at. The downside is all the overdubs they'd done since Miami and all of that stuff was not on those older master tapes. So they would either have to figure that stuff out again and play it again, or what they end up doing, and I mean, you'll have to read the book to get the full explanation, but a guy had to play two tape machines at the same time and watch them manually, because at some point with tape machines, at least back then, they don't run in phase. Like, they're going to, one's going to get a little ahead of the other at some point. And this guy, for 9 months worth of recordings, had to sit and play these two tape machines and keep them in perfect time manually to get the stuff they did from Miami onto these better master tapes.
Well, because we all know how well it would go if you have to break it to Lindsey Buckingham that the take he wants is not done properly. You know, yeah. It's
Yeah. The whole time he's doing that too, I just picture Lindsey Buckingham standing behind him with his hands outstretched like Boris Karloff, and then Mick Fleetwood standing to the side with a hammer just if you let these get out of phase, you're gonna get it. You're gonna get Kowloon'd, my dude.
Without getting too far off the topic, I'll just say anytime you get to hear stories about how records were made during this time of tape, like, it's just, we think of these classic rock records as like everybody knew what they were doing and they were going after a certain thing. And it's always like, they ran the tape over with a car by accident and they had to find a way to make it work right. Like, it's just always people doing shit, just crazy workshop to make it work right. So that's crazy that somebody had to sit there and make sure the motors didn't get ahead of each other. That just sounds crazy.
Yeah, and the way they describe it, it sounds like he just has like a special talent that most people don't have. Like, most people would not have been able to do what he did to rescue Rumors. And fucking imagine if Rumors was like a lost album. Like, just a thing that there, it, rumor has it that Fleetwood Mac recorded a really great album in the 70s and it's all gone. It's just disappeared. Like, there's a band I like a lot called The Kills. Anyone familiar with The Kills?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
The guitar player from The Kills, who is also the songwriter in The Kills, had an entire album on a laptop, and he was dating Kate Moss at the time. And Kate Moss and he got in an argument, and she threw that laptop in a swimming pool, and that album gone forever.
I mean, that's worse than having the song you worked on for several months not make it to the final track listing. Like, that's an unforgivable like action.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I have a friend in a band called Low Hum, and when they were on tour, they had a bunch of hard drives stolen, and like the album that they were working on for months was on those hard drives, and it's just gone.
Put that shit in the cloud, you guys. That's the moral of the story, is they should have been putting stuff in the cloud back then.
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. Why didn't you put it in the cloud?
Fleet Cloud Mac? Come on. Yeah, and I'm glossing
Fleet
over.
Fleet Cloud back up? All right.
I'm glossing over this incident a little bit. It takes up about 10 to 15 pages in the book. It was a very intense moment where we almost lost this album to history.
Right, but to our point earlier, like, you'd also lose it to at least one member of the band who is unhinged and attacky.
Right.
You can't come to Lindsey Buckingham and be like, Lackluster's the only one we got, because he's just going to, kabong you with his guitar.
Yeah. You'd have to bring Steve Earle along as muscle.
You're lucky I know where the masters are right now.
You get Lindsey as masters.
You're lucky I'm manually watching these two tape players.
You're lucky I don't have a driver's license.
As long as these tape players are in sync with each other, I'm not at your house with a 50 cal.
The second these things go out of phase, kablam.
Hey, everybody. This is Adam, host of the podcast you're listening to right now. Just dropping in to let you know that if you're enjoying this Fleetwood Mac season of You Don't Even Like This Band, but would prefer to hear it without annoying ads like this one, head on over to youdontpod.supercast.com and sign up for the You Don't Even Like This Band Backstage Pass for just $4 a month. Not only do you get ad-free episodes, you get access to an absolute litany of bonus episodes that you can't hear anywhere else. But wait, there's more. Subscribers also already have access to the entirety of the second Fleetwood Mac season of You Don't Even Like This Band. And since we finished that, we've put up a bunch of bonus episodes, and we're gearing up to start a new season about a completely different band that you don't even like. There's a lot to listen to, and you can listen to it all for just four little dollars a month. Head to youdontpod.supercast.com and sign up for that or any of our other subscription options and start listening right away. And thanks. We love you. Let's get back to the podcast.
And so with that, the band moves on to yet another recording studio, the Record Plant in Los Angeles. And this is significant.
Wait, was this like a franchise? Like, well, they had one in New York. They had one in Sausalito. They have one in L.A. Is it all the same people?
Well, I think so. Yeah.
This is what we had before the old Spaghetti Factory. It was the Record Plant.
This record is delicious.
Yeah, there's only one Record Plant left. It's somewhere in Alaska now. There's a documentary about it.
It's half Kenny Rogers Roasters and half Record Plant.
God, I loved Kenny Rogers Roasters. Oh, tasty, tasty. So the Record Plant in Los Angeles, what's significant about their time recording here is this is where the song The Chain finally comes together.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And what's unique about The Chain is it's a lot like Smells Like Teen Spirit, in that it is the only Fleetwood Mac song, I believe, where the entire band is credited as writers, which is also the case with Smells Like Teen Spirit. And I think there's one song on In Utero, which
where Fleetwood Mac
Nirvana
is credited
songs
with writing it.
Yeah. Stevie Nicks wrote Scented Apprentice.
No, I think it's Radio Friendly Unit Shifter. Every member of Fleetwood Mac has a credit on Radio Friendly Unit Shifter.
It's my favorite Nirvana song, by the way.
It's up there for me. It's like a top three, I think.
Yeah.
Lindsey Buckingham is not credited for writing All Apologies.
No.
Yeah, that guy's never apologized for his whole life.
Sorry for any fucking thing, probably. Yeah, The Chain, the reason the entire band is credited on it is it's actually three different songs that just weren't coming together in the studio, and they eventually like take elements from each one and make this mishmash Frankenstein of a song that turns out to be like their most enduring hit of all time. That's what they still, I'm sure, to this day open all their shows with.
And
this is my favorite song on the album. It's my favorite Fleetwood Mac song. It's just, and this is the thing, like with Gold Dust Woman, like learning more about this song makes it all even better to me. Like I'm looking at these things and I'm like, oh, they're all credited. It's a collaborative effort. I love that. There's a Frankenstein gimmick. I love that. Like, this all makes me like the song even more. But just as the song, like, it has two of my favorite things that you can do in music. It's got like gang vocals, which is automatically like, anytime there's an entire the entire band is singing, or a bunch of different people are doing different things with group vocalizations. They're singing in unison and harmonizing. Sometimes they're singing in a round, which is always a treat. And it's got the little, like, showcase for the bass moment, which I love. Like, this song, you could write a song that's, like, that I find politically abhorrent. But if it has those two things in it, if there's a part where, like, interesting group vocalizations, and then if there's a part where, like, the entire band drops out, you get, like, a little groovy bass for a minute, and just that's it, and then the drums come in, I'm like, I don't care what this song is about. I'm going to listen to it.
Yeah.
So what it sounds like we need ABBA to do a MAGA record, and you'll just be super on board.
I mean, I wouldn't be on, I would listen to it on incognito mode on Spotify.
Yeah.
I like that whole end section that starts with that bass riff.
Oh my God. And that crescendo.
Is great. And yeah, the way Lindsey Buckingham's guitar solo, like, fades in is so fucking great. God, I love that song.
It's cool, but if you, it makes sense that it's a Frankenstein version of three different songs, because if you listen to, like, early demos, it's got this, like, ballady kind of thing, and the melody's slightly different, and you hear it and you go, that's not it, guys. Like, that's not the thing.
Yeah.
So the final product, y'all nailed it.
Yeah. And the fact too that, right, that Stevie Nicks got the melody and the lyrics at the last second, you said, it's just like, yeah, it's also got, there's like a dramatic quality there.
So again, those transcensions, they pay off.
And the thing Ken Kaleh points out in the book is, up to that point, Stevie Nicks was the one in the band who, like, needed the most help to get her songs across the finish line. And then for her to do that at the last minute for the chain, like, really spoke to how kind of undervalued she was.
Redemption in the band. Arc.
Yeah. Such a good song. Yeah, this needs to be a fucking movie. Come on. Make it the movie. Even the way they come up with the track listing is a fun story. They were pretty much done recording the album, and that was, like, the next thing they needed to come up with. This is while they were mixing it at Sound City, yet another studio. Ever heard of it?
Another studio.
Yeah, which is also where they recorded the White Album, if I recall correctly. And they're in the studio mixing the album, and they're trying to figure out a track list, and they just give everyone in the studio a piece of paper and say, write down what you think the order of these songs should be.
Stevie Nicks just wrote Silver Spring, Silver Spring, Silver
Spring. And
Lindsey Buckingham just dumped a glass of water over everybody's list.
It's just setting lists on fire.
Yeah.
Mick Fleetwood sitting in the corner hitting his list with a hammer.
Probably all of that. And then they're not getting a list that they like. And out of nowhere, the band's secretary, a woman named Judy Wong, comes in, and she just grabs a piece of paper and makes her own list. And Ken Kaleh says, he was like, okay, come on, you're the secretary. They're not going to fucking listen to you. And sure enough, they take, like, one look at her list and they're like, that's it. Like, that is it. The only issue anyone had, Lindsey Buckingham wasn't sure about a ballad following Go Your Own Way. But then they listened to it in that order, and he was like, I'm wrong. You're right. So the band's fucking secretary is the one who ultimately decided the track list.
I'm sorry. Did you just say Lindsey Buckingham admitted he was wrong to a woman?
I know. Crazy, right?
That doesn't sound like the Lindsey Buckingham I know.
They put her in disguise. She looked like Mr. T when she came in. And then they pull the mask off, and Lindsey realizes it's a woman.
No! No, I've been Kowloon'd.
So yeah, even that part of Rumors is neat. Like, that, I want to see that part in the movie where they.
I want Judy Wong to be the main character of the movie.
If you didn't read that in the book, is she, like, thanked anywhere on, like, the original liner notes or anything? Like, does she get any kind of shout outs?
I'm sure she is. Ken Kaleh talks about her at several points throughout the book, and it is clear that she was, like, a beloved figure in the Fleetwood Mac camp. So I would be shocked if she's not thanked somewhere on the album. I wonder if she got money for that. I don't know.
Was she sleeping with all of them?
Yeah. Every single
one
of them.
She drove the car that hit Jenny. She's like,
she was sleeping with the car that hit Jenny. like that movie.
Which movie?
Andy, what was the horror movie about the woman who fucked cars?
Well, there's Crash. There's Titan.
Yeah.
Oh, Titan. Yeah, that's the one. That's the titanium one. Yeah.
Christine, which is actually about Christine McVie. Yeah, she that makes turned
sense.
Into a car.
Yeah, she turned into a car and tried to. She was possessed by the devil, and yeah.
Yeah, she's back haunting that car where she's always belonged.
But then she stops and does a couple of ballads.
So we're kind of to the end of the Rumors recording sessions, but we're not to the point where Rumors is released. And
yeah, we haven't got to the point where Mick Fleetwood shot the master with a 50 cal yet.
Right.
That's a different show, Andy. That's a different guy.
Oh. Are we at the part where Lindsey Buckingham gets kicked out of the Navy for skateboarding on a battleship?
No, this is the part where John McVie contracts spinal meningitis.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's why he brought the bagpipes in to the MTV Fleetwood Mac Unplugged. Right. Gotcha. Right.
And there's a conspiracy theory that Stevie Nicks hired someone to kill Peter Green.
Mm-hmm. With cocaine up the ass.
The Green Il Ducherishi.
So that brings us to the end of this Rumors episode. There's going to be at least one more. Do we have any final thoughts? I mean, I know at the end of the last episode, we gushed about how great Rumors is. Still is.
I'm just still, you know, the more you know about Goldust Woman, this is what I said last time. I just think it's the perfect bookend to the album. And it's the end of that relationship. It's like a final fuck you, but it's the most beautiful fuck you I think someone's ever put on record. I just love that song.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate it more after learning so much about it. And here's the thing, like, there are remastered versions of this album that have Silver Springs as the last song. Mm-hmm. And it's a good ending, but it does, like, it feels like it should be somewhere else in the album.
Yeah, I would definitely not. Gold Dust Woman is the only way to end this record.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a good album. God damn it. Everyone own Rumors. Go buy a copy of Rumors and own it.
And Gold Dust Woman is such a good song that even when Courtney Love, who I'm bringing up again, covered it years ago, that's even a good cover. It can survive Courtney Love. That's a good song.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Don't Stop is a song that has been ruined for me. Don't Stop Believing is another song like this, but it's like, and it's not just because it's overplayed. It's because it's also like, I mean, Bill Clinton, like,
I was going to say, is it the Clinton
forever,
thing?
It's Clinton. Yeah. Like, there's no way for me to listen to that song now without associating it with, you know, a lifetime of frustration with the Democratic Party. I mean, that's just, it's there. Bill Clinton reached into the machinery of my ability to appreciate that song and fucked it up. And there's songs that are like that, like, I can't listen to. But even this song, like, listening to it this time, I was like, nope, still a great song. I will probably never listen to it again. But yeah. It's, like, forever connected with the failings of, you know, the baby boomers and everything else, which is what capitalism does to music a lot of times. Like, whether it's a commercial or George W. Bush playing Fortunate Son or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Well, for me, it is just the overplayed part of it. For me, Don't Stop is kind of like their Stairway to Heaven, where it's like, okay, I get it, but there are other Fleetwood Mac songs. Come on. What I didn't know about it that actually kind of softened me up to that song again is that Christine McVie wrote that about John McVie. So in the midst of these
Curry Grant, I'm like, good Lord, this guy.
Well, like, in the midst of these sessions when everyone hates each other, she's also like, aw, my ex-husband's really sad, and fucking wrote Don't Stop for
him. Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. Sarah Ball here.
A lot of these songs are kind of mature in their perspective on relationship trouble.
Yeah, I think when Christine writes them, they are. I think the other ones are just...
Yeah,
middle fingers, you know.
But I mean, even the middle fingers songs are like articulating something, you know, in a way that, you know, you kind of have to think about these things to articulate them this well. And I mean, yeah, it doesn't come through in a lot of their behaviors, but
yeah, I would argue Lindsey saying Stevie packing up and shacking up is all you want to do. That was a little harsh. That probably wasn't the most mature.
Yeah, lyric. Probably not.
He also shouldn't have punched that woman in the face.
No, yeah, that look, seems like a real bad move. I just want to be clear. Yeah. If I ever say that the people in this band are acting mature, it should go without saying that I'm leaving Lindsey Buckingham out of that.
Yeah.
And you're also saying for the people in this band. Like,
yeah,
not,
exactly. Yeah. By their bar, which is a very different standard than the rest of us.
Yeah.
Look, not all of us are hanging out in cocaine pits.
Not now.
Not as much as we should be.
Yeah.
That's very true. That's very true.
One thing I found about the title of Gold Dust Woman is that Stevie Nicks' myth around that changes based on what decade they've interviewed her. Like, it starts for, like, she started admitting that Gold Dust Woman is like it's basically saying cocaine woman. But then at other points, she's like, well, I used to live on a street called Gold Dust. And I'm like, no, you didn't. Shut up. Yeah. It didn't happen.
How many holes are in your brain, Stevie?
Probably so many. Oh, man. So
still though. These are like the five most attractive people. Well, okay.
Yeah, that's pushing it.
The three most attractive people in this band.
Right. And then John and Mick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Mick just looks like tall John, basically.
Stretch John, that's like the Phantasm cover of the White Album.
So I think that's our episode, right? I feel like we did it.
We got it. I mean, we covered Rumors. We started some of our own. Like, I think we did it.
Yeah, well, on the next episode, we'll talk about the reception to Rumors, which was enthusiastic, to say the least. My God. And then...
when there are a bunch of, like... billboards or the bylines, it said like Rumor has it, you know, like they're just like, it's such a good record, you know.
And then after that, we get to talk about Tusk, which
I am really psyched to talk about Tusk.
Very excited. That is, that's the album where Fleetwood Mac takes a hard left turn on their fan base. And if you listen to it now, like, it doesn't sound that different from what we know of Fleetwood Mac, but it's a very different album compared to Rumors.
Compared to Rumors and to even the White Album. All of a sudden it's like, what is this tribal boogie we're doing? Like, what's, you know?
That's the thing, though. Tusk, I think, is actually my favorite Fleetwood Mac song. Like,
it's so cool.
It's really good.
Love
it's
Tusk.
Really good.
Huh?
It's really good.
It's so good. That guitar riff.
Yeah.
And it's so simple. Like, that guitar riff is so simple, but it's so good. And also, probably a little problematic, right? All the, like, ooga-chaka stuff. I don't
Absolutely.
I don't know if I wanted that in Lindsey Buckingham's voice. Brought in the USC band. You couldn't bring some actual, like, tribal leaders in to handle that part? I don't know.
They had agreed to, and then he dumped water on their crotches at the negotiation dinner.
And then he choked them out because they erased the take that he liked. So it was a whole problem.
Yeah, and he punched one of them in the face, and...
oh. Here, let's end on a funny but also kind of horrifying story about
get more of those.
Well, it ties into Tusk because, okay. And I know I'm going to forget to put it in the notes when we talk about Tusk because the story is in the Rumors book, but Ken Kaleh also wrote a book about the making of Tusk. And I'm sure the story probably comes up there, but just in case it doesn't, the cover of the Tusk album does not have anyone in the band on it.
Yeah.
There is a picture of a dog biting someone's foot. And the dog is Ken Kaleh's dog named Scooter. And Ken Kaleh tells this story about Stevie Nicks being furious that they chose a picture of a dog to put on the cover, to the point that when the dog died a few years later, he told Stevie Nicks, and she said, "I'm glad your dog died. He stole that album cover from me."
Holy God. Shit.
Well, damn, Stevie Nicks.
Well, she's more of a cat person, you know?
Also, too, at that point, she's had two back-to-back, like, album tragedies in her mind. It's like, you didn't put my song on Rumors, and you put a photo of a dog on Tusk. Like, the fuck do you want from me?
Yeah. She's like, "I killed your dog."
Well, this is the same woman who, like, decades later was like, Christine's not in the band anymore. We don't want her in the band. We don't care.
And then Christine McVie immediately came back. That was great. So, yeah, that seems like a good way to end. Stevie Nicks telling Ken Kalay she's glad his dog died.
Good God.
Harsh.
That while getting cocaine blown up her butthole.
Sorry, it's the butt coke talking.
So that's our episode. Thank you both. Do we have anything to plug before we get out of here? My show already happened. Thank you all for coming out. It was packed. I appreciate it.
I have my new line of butt coke coming out. I'd really appreciate it if you would sign up for updates.
Andy, do you have any butt coke updates?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Mm. All right.
I don't have any butt coke updates. Look good for the boys. Listen to it. Ghoul School. Listen to it. That's all I got for me. And rumors. Listen to it again. Why not?
Listen to it and listen to Tusk in preparation for our next couple of episodes, because we're going to get there soon. We're going to try. Fleetwood Mac doesn't have that many albums. We can probably cover them all. Like, they haven't made an actual album since 2003. And that was their first in like 40 years. So
I do like when we were doing Korn, we just were like, and the rest, like we were like, there's too many Korn records. You know, like, we can't cover all these. I didn't know they made 15 records. No one told me that.
No, I think it was Oasis we did that with.
Oh, did we do that with them?
I think our last Oasis both of them.
Yeah, our last Oasis episode is just, yeah, there's a lot. Fucking go listen to
Oasis.
So
I still like the most recent Korn record. There's an update for you.
I do too.
I still think it's a great record.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Sorry.
I've been watching that Nebworth documentary about whichever Oasis brother played that one.
Yeah.
Noel? No.
Oh.
Liam.
They both played Nebworth.
But like one of them came as a solo. Like,
oh, really?
Since they won't do it together anymore. He like went and sold it out and it was like a big deal. And it's interesting. I'm only about halfway through it though.
Huh. All right. I think we can get out of here. Travis, say goodbye.
Butt coke, goodbye.
Andy, say goodbye.
Yeah, pick up the pieces and go home.
Oh, goodbye, everybody. We love you.